This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Anti-White Problems. I'm going to discuss a disturbing trend that I wrote a blog about earlier in this past week, and I want to expand on the, it was really just the tip of an iceberg, and I want to expand on that iceberg a bit. So the title of this blog post that I wrote was Sagan and O'Hare's Big Damning White Problems, and I compared and contrasted these two very similar stories. One that I had talked about in the last podcast, the story about Andrew O'Hare's article about Hollywood, and a new one that had just recently come to light, written by Sasha Sagan, who looks very Jewish and has very Jewish thoughts. And his the title of his article was Google Glasses White Male Problem. And you can read the blog post about it, but he writes, this is a big problem. I say this as a middle-aged white man. And that both of those things caught my eye. First of all, the white problem aspect, which I had just been talking about on the previous podcast and had seen before, and this pose as a middle-aged white man. And he put those things right together, and in a way, basically excusing his attack on whites, his criticism of whites, by pretending to be white, by saying, you know, it's okay because I'm white, I'm allowed to say this negative stuff about whites. And I won't get into the details of what he was complaining about. If you want, you can follow the links to my to the blog post and read about it. But he was complaining about these new computer eyeglasses being he's only seen them on white men. So, and it turns out that many of them are Jews, and he's really just transferring the blame for that, if there is any blame, to whites. And I saw that as having a lot in common with this year-old article, a little over a year old, that Andrew O'Hare had written, titled The Oscars, Old White Male Problem, where he does a similar thing. He looks at a predominantly Jewish, or Jews being overrepresented in the group, and he says that it's a problem, and that the problem is there's too many white people. And again, it's what's really grating about it is this pretense that Jews are white when they're doing something that's supposedly bad. And to see how bizarre this is, according to today's standards that are different for Jews and whites, is it's perfectly okay. And O'Hare's article, you know, really brings this out. It's perfectly okay in this politically correct anti-white regime in the Jews media to criticize whites for there being too many white people, but all you have to do is take out white and drop in Jew, and suddenly it becomes something that only ugly people would do for ugly reasons. This is disguising Jewish overrepresentation, and it's transferring the blame to whites. And it's, you know, the remedy that's urged for this problem is diversity, more diversity. And what more diversity really means in practice is less white people. And they don't mean less Jews, they mean less whites. So however many whites there are on the Academy Awards organization, this is basically a call for less white people there, or in the case of Google Glass, whatever white people, get rid of some of them and put some black people in their place is what this Sasha Sagan's promoting. So I had seen this idea before. I've seen the words white problem before, and I had seen it as early as 2008 in a political context. A Jew at the Washington Post named Harold Meyerson wrote an article where he used that term. Now, who's Harold Meyerson? Harold Meyerson describes himself as a political pundit. He claims that he won the 2009 Atlantic Monthly, an award from the Atlantic Monthly in 2009, as being one of the 50 most influential columnists. And the Atlantic Monthly calls its list an all-star team. And these are the most influential commentators in the nation, the columnists and bloggers and broadcast pundits who shape the national debates. So Harold Meyerson is one of those 50. I'm sure it's skewed toward Jews, and it's really, there is a bit of a phenomena here of Jews just piling accolades on their fellow tribe mates. But these people really are influential in national debates. When issues come up, these are the people who always have an opinion and get their opinion broadcast and get it repeated by other people. And in fact, this white problem idea, this white problem meme, is he's one of the people that's beating this drum. And he legitimatized this claim as far back as 2008. During the first election that Obama was a candidate in, and he was writing this article titled Economy, What Economy? In fact, right after the Republican convention and just before the election. And what he said was very telling. You know, basically, he was saying, economy, you know, who cares about the economy? The real problem here is race. And he writes, but the economy is not all. The GOP's last best hope remains identity politics. In a year when the Democrats have an African-American presidential nominee, the Republicans now more than ever are the white folks' party, the party that delays the advent of our multicultural future, the party of America, the American past. Republican conventions have long been bastions of de facto Caucasian exclusivity, but coming right after the diversity of Denver, he's talking about the Democrat convention, this year's GOP convention is almost shockingly un-Americanly white. Long term, this whiteness is a huge problem. And usually these guys, when they say that there's a white problem, they don't just say there's a white problem. Sasha Sagan said there was a big problem. Andrew O'Hare called it a damning problem. And here's Meyerson calling it a huge problem. Now, why is it a problem? Identity politics is something that left-wing Jews created. Well, that's the answer, is that it was created by left-wing Jews. It wasn't created for white people. It was created for everybody but white people. And they don't want white people to have an identity. They don't certainly don't want us to think of ourselves as white people and think about what politics would be best for us as white people. And that's the point of Meyerson's guilt-tripping the nasty words that he's using is he's saying, you know, white people collecting numbers that are too large is a problem because he doesn't want whites to practice identity politics. This was echoed 4 years later by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Now, because you could say that, you know, Meyerson, who cares? He's just a journalist or a pundit. He doesn't have any political power. Well, here's somebody who has political power. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I'm pretty sure she's in the House of Representatives, but in this capacity in 2012, she was speaking as the Democratic National Committee chairwoman during the election. It's the second time around for Obama. And she was crowing, pretty much echoing what Meyerson was saying. There is a reason that the Democratic Party is far more diverse than the Republican Party, because the natural home politically on major issues to Hispanics, to women, to Jews, to Asian Americans, the diverse spectrum, to African Americans. She forgot to mention blacks there until the very end. The entire spectrum of diversity is comfortable in the Democratic Party because we stand up for the issues that matter to those communities, and the Republicans shun them. Well, you notice she didn't mention whites explicitly there. She stayed away from that. That's true. But it's conspicuous the way whites are left out. And in fact, the Democratic Party pretty much actively shuns whites. And that's the whole idea behind this too white business is it's basically shunning whites. It's, you should not have so many whites. Get rid of some of them. And what she's arguing here is, just like Meyerson, is that the Republicans should also actively shun whites. And as I commented at the time in the blog post about where I brought up Wasserman Schultz's statement, I pointed out Jews have two parties that actively seek to serve their interests. And all the other non-whites have one party, at least the Democrats, and the whites have no party that actively seeks to serve our interests. Certainly, there's no Republican that would make a statement like Debbie Wasserman Schultz made about all those non-white groups. There's no Republican that would make that statement about white voters and wanting white votes and wanting to serve white interests. And forget about the Democrats doing it. They can't even do it for white working class people who they supposedly want to vote Democrat. So there's another article here. This transitions now into more cultural issues, now out of politics and into culture. And but it's still a problem. And there's an article that came up in 2010, June of 2010, titled "Problem: What Problem?" Oh, that was the part. Sorry, that was the title of my post on the subject. It was actually the word problem does come up, but the article was titled "Ballet Series Has Lots of Talent, Little Diversity," and it was written by a woman, a Jewess named Sarah Kaufman. Here's what she wrote: "The companies are also overwhelmingly white and dotted with Europeans, as they have always been. Diversity in ballet remains a serious problem for the small companies as well as the large, on the coasts as well as in the heartland. In the 21st century, we can put a black man in the White House, but as last week's survey shows, we can't put a black ballerina in the opera house. Clearly not enough work is being done to foster African-American dancers." Now, one of the things that's in common with what Harold Meyerson wrote is this business about using blacks as a proxy. I don't believe for a second that either one of these Jews cares about blacks and what's good for blacks. But what they're doing is they're disguising Jewish power, Jewish overrepresentation in politics and the arts as critics, as you know, people who shape the discussion and the debate. And they're transferring blame to whites. They're blaming whites for causing a problem. And in this case, what these two share is also disingenuously using blacks as sort of a shield to distract us, in part to make it look like it's a black-white issue rather than a white-Jew issue. I think that helps there. And it's plain hostility toward whites, too, Jewish hostility to whites, as I've talked about many times before. Another related story that came up more recently, this was in January of 2013, was an article from the LA Times titled "Vienna Philharmonic Attacked for Past Nazi Ties and Being Too White." And I know that Carolyn Yeager talked about this in one of her shows at about that time. But it has to do with a Jewish critic, a blogger, really. I don't think he has any more credentials than that. He's no more credentials than I do to comment on things. His name is Norman Lebrecht. And the LA Times article writes, he runs a widely read classical music blog. That's his credentials for saying that the Vienna Philharmonic is too white. And he wrote that the orchestra has no Asian or other non-white members. Quote, "even though one-third of the students at Vienna's University of Music come from the Far East." Well, I say to that business about the Far East, that's a nice way of putting it. Why can't, if there's so many Far Easterners that like to play classical music, why can't they find places to play in the Far East? What's wrong with the Far East that they can't play classical music there and study classical music there. It's a European thing, of course. But why can't they have Europeans go there and teach there? Why are there one-third of the Viennese university students non-Austrians and really alien Asians? If the positions were reversed, if one-third of the students at Beijing University were white, you can bet that these same people who think that this is a big problem in Vienna would still say that was a big problem. They'd be consistent in that respect. And in fact, they'd be consistent in saying that it's a white problem. It's still a problem because there's too many white people. You know, it's just bizarre. It's things like this, it's criticisms like this that really drive home the reality that it's whiteness that's a problem. It's not disparities or overrepresentation that's a problem as a principle, that if there's a certain number of people in the population that some organization should have that number of different types of people in it, because they don't apply that principle across the board. And you know, it wouldn't make sense to apply it across the board, of course, but they act like it should. They act like when there's too many whites in one place, they look at some other aspect of society and say, well, look, the population doesn't match, and you need to fix it by reducing the number of white people. This is related to another story that I wrote a long blog post about, and I thought it was good original work that I hadn't seen anywhere else. And again, this is back to politics, and this was during the 2012 Republican primary. There was it was actually a pretty big story that Andrea Mitchell, who's a Jewish longtime TV newscaster, had said on TV that, well, let me quote her directly. She said, the rap on Iowa, it doesn't represent the rest of the country. Too white, too evangelical, too rural. And that's, a lot of people got upset about that. A lot of Republicans got upset about that. Now, not about the too white business, but they made more of a stink about the evangelical and rural business. I mean, they understand that it was an attack on white people, and they probably even reacted to a certain extent because they perceived it as an attack on themselves. But they'd be the first people, these conservatives, mainstream conservatives, to deny that it had really anything to do with race. And they certainly would deny that it had anything to do with Andrea Mitchell being a Jewess and being hostile to whites. In fact, they'd rather, you know, condemn someone like me for pointing it out than they would accept that truth, unless you can talk to them the way that I'm talking in this podcast. It's why I do these podcasts, is to point out these things to people in a calm, rational way, in a way that makes sense, in a way that makes more sense than the big food fight that the media and the political parties put on for them. Well, anyway, Andrea Mitchell made this comment, and it turned out that she was actually citing an article that had been written a few days earlier and published in the New York Times by Arthur Greg Sulzberger, who is the son of the New York Times publisher and whose family owns a controlling share in the New York Times. And what he actually wrote, the comment he wrote that Andrea Mitchell was basically echoing, was, too small, critics say, too rural, too white. So this piqued my interest. I mean, even when I first heard the statement from Andrea Mitchell, I knew that I wanted to get to the root of this meme. You know, who was saying this? It reminded me of Meyerson, for sure, but it was before Wasserman Schultz had said what she said. And anyway, I tracked it down to who I think was the original source of this, and that is Stephen Bloom, who's a Jew professor who's been embedded in Iowa for the last 20 years. And just a few days before Sulzberger wrote his article, Bloom had published his article in The Atlantic. and it was titled Observations from 20 Years of Iowa Life. One of the quotes I pulled out here to sort of sum up his point of view is, "I've lived in many places, lots of them foreign countries, but none has been more foreign to me than Iowa." And I think that pretty much sums up where he's coming from. Now, why has he lived in Iowa for 20 years if he feels like such an alien there? I mean, why doesn't he relocate to New York City? In fact, I know a little bit about Bloom. He actually lived in San Francisco for a long time before he moved to Iowa. And he's actually made a career out of basically criticizing Iowa and Iowans. He's written books about the subject. And a lot of those books, a lot of the meat of those books is basically him just complaining about how different Iowans are and how alienated he feels by them. And he, of course, transfers the blame to them, that they're mistreating him. They're staring at him. They say things like, you know, "You're not from around these parts, are you?" I mean, perfectly innocently, they really don't understand Jews, probably, but certainly not as well as he understands them. But he interprets it as hostility, and it's really just his own hostility reflected back at him that he's sensing. He writes, and this is really the nut of his article, and this is what the sentiment that Sulzberger and Andrea Mitchell ultimately echoed into the national debate and became part of the national debate. "In a perfect world," Bloom wrote, "no way would Iowa ever be considered representative of America, or even a small part of it. Iowa is not representative of much. There are few minorities, no sizable cities, and the state's about to lose one of its 5 seats in the U.S. House because its population is shifting. Any growth is negligible. Still, thanks to a host of nonsensical political precedents, whoever wins the Iowa caucuses in January will very likely have a 50% chance of being elected president 11 months later." And so this is the whole point of his very long article. He wrote a long article with all sorts of little trivia and little personal interest stories, trappings, really, to give the impression like he was sincere, and you might have even gotten the impression from the detail that he put into it that he actually sympathized with the white Iowans. But he doesn't. And when you pull out a paragraph like I've just read, you see that he's saying in his perfect world, it doesn't look anything like Iowa. So Iowa is bad. I mean, I don't want to put words in the guy's mouth, but, you know, he's basically saying he doesn't like the idea that this place, which he doesn't like so much, has such a say over the politics of the whole country. And he uses this argument that it's not representative of the rest of the country. You could say the United States is not representative of the rest of the world, and therefore we should open our borders and flood the whole country so that we look more like the rest of the world. In fact, that is one of the arguments that the open borders people make. It's a nonsensical argument. I mean, where do you stop? In your own household, your house has to look like the world. It's I say that almost jokingly, but it's true. I mean, they hold up what's his name, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and their multiracial family of adoptees as the ideal. That's what every American should strive to have their family look like. And one of the points I want to make here, let me see, did I finish this? Yeah, I think I did, this Bloom business. One of the points I want to make here is that none of these phenomena that these critics that are talking about white problems are talking about is from the point of view of whites. In fact, it's anti-white, as I say. They're anti-white problems. It's not sympathizing with whites. It's antipathetic to whites. And it's based not on what these whites that they're looking at believe or are saying or are doing. It's based on just the fact that they look at a sea of white faces and they see too many white people. It's really that simple. They're not examining these people and saying, oh, they're organizing for some cause that's going to harm other people. It's not even in the past that has been used to pathologize and demonize the KKK and other organizations, saying, oh, these people they're just so narrow-minded and they're only concerned about themselves and their group and their haters and they hate everybody else. Well, in this case, it's just white people being. And these critics, every single one of them that I've talked about, is really just talking about that being unacceptable, being a big problem. And, different words for big being used. But that's an important point here. And that's why I say this is a disturbing trend. This isn't, the old days. This isn't decades ago where there were actually organizations with lots of angry white folk with the idea in their head that they're white people and they want what's best for white people like themselves, and organizing and being active in politics and being active in the street. We really are so far gone now and so far down the road that at this point, these pundits in the Jews media are taking pot shots at basically defenseless whites now, whites who aren't even organizing as whites. Now think about that for a few minutes. That's the big problem, and that's what I would flip it around to say here, is that from a white point of view, this trend is a problem. It's one of the things that woke me up to the inescapability of race. You know, you may pretend that race doesn't matter to you. All these Tea Partiers and all these Republicans and Democrat, white working class that vote Democrat, you may all pretend that race doesn't matter to you and it's not important, but it is important. And it's these non-whites that will remind you that it's important. They'll tell you that it's important. They insist that it's important just by there being too many white people for their tastes around. And this is a problem for white people. And flip it around. I don't care really what anti-white problems are. I care about what white people's problems are. And it's, the fact that these ideas, these memes that whites are a problem, that this or that is too white, are being propagandized. They're being repeated over and over to the masses by this thoroughly Judaized corporate media, what I call the Jews media. The effect is that it demoralizes whites and it emboldens non-whites. That's how it's creating problems for whites. And the reason I do these podcasts is to try and counter this propaganda. One good way to counter it is to point it out for what it is and take the mask off, call it out. And that's what I'm trying to do, expose it as the manipulative lies that are intended to create problems for whites that it is. So I hope I've made that point. I have a bit more to talk about along the same lines, but it'll be a slightly different episode next time.